This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 26th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 118. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The big deal feature. Huawei Chief Financial Officer Meng Wanzhou was back in the court of law in Vancouver as her lawyers opposed her extradition. Meanwhile, controversy erupted in the court of public opinion. Paid protesters outside the courthouse, and Meng's bodyguard found doing double duty with the Chinese government. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or has this been the most bizarre start to a year in living memory? Consider the stories so far in 2020 that affect or involve Canada and even British Columbia. And January is not even over. First, of course, there's Trump versus Iran, the assassination of an Iranian general in Iraq. Iranian missiles were shot at U.S. bases in Iraq in retaliation. We now find out that some of the soldiers at those bases suffered traumatic brain injuries. The same night that happened, Iran shot down a Ukrainian Airlines 737 carrying 176 people. Most of them were en route to Canada. They all died. Iran called it mechanical malfunction, but it removed evidence from the debris field and played keep away with the black box. It finally admitted, after about 3 days, that it was responsible, but it called it a mistake. Will investigators ever be able to find evidence that established it was a deliberate mass murder? A case of terrorism, perhaps? The impeachment trial of President Donald Trump began in the Senate. Then, in Vancouver, the extradition of Huawei CFO Meng Wanzhou began in BC Supreme Court. There were even mysteriously paid protesters who were hired in support of Meng. Now, the coronavirus epidemic in China. Just in time for Lunar New Year, the time of year when hundreds of millions of Chinese are supposed to be traveling around the country to visit family and friends. Wuhan and other cities are under lockdown and public celebrations have been cancelled throughout the country. And then there's Harry and Meghan, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. They're leaving the royal family to settle part-time in Canada. They both returned to a North Saanich, BC mansion, and their lawyers have threatened paparazzi. Which leaves me with one big question. What next in February? Of course, truth is stranger than fiction. So stay tuned. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. William Zheng and Lori Chen report in the South China Morning Post, rush is on in Wuhan to build China Coronavirus Treatment Center for up to 1,000 patients. Wuhan is rushing to build a makeshift hospital on its outskirts as a quarantine and treatment center for patients in the latest coronavirus outbreak, replicating a step regarded as instrumental in Beijing's fight 17 years ago against severe acute respiratory syndrome, also known as SARS. Hundreds of workers have been mobilized to complete the hospital, essentially a quarantine center with capacity for about 1,000 patients, within 6 days, as the disease spreads rapidly across China to all provinces and autonomous regions, with the exception of Tibet and Shanghai. The facility is likely to occupy nearly 25,000 square meters and will accommodate 1,000 beds, according to official Communist Party mouthpiece People's Daily. According to locals in Wuhan, the authorities are paying workers on the project as much as $173 US per day, which is three times their usual wage, to accelerate construction. Paul Johnson of ABC News Australia reports, the C-130 large air tanker that crashed while fighting New South Wales fires. What we know about the plane. Australia's devastating bushfire season has claimed the lives of three more people, the crew of an aerial water bomber being leased from a North American company. While Australia has a fleet of about 140 firefighting aircraft, including small and large planes and helicopters, the crash in the snowy mountains has cut the number of C-130s in half. The plane can carry 15,000 liters of water or fire retardant, which can be released in one large drop within seconds or over several smaller drops. Coulson Aviation has grounded their large air tanker fleet as a precaution and as a mark of respect, and an investigation will take place into the incident. Peter Elstrom and Emmy Urabi report in the Japan Times, "Wipeout, Japan's ski slopes suffering worst winter in decades." This winter has been unusually warm and dry in Japan. In Hokkaido to the north, where resorts like Niseko are known for reliable fresh powder, the snow failed to fall in December and remains scant in the new year. In Sapporo, ski competitions have been canceled, and the city is trucking in snow for its annual snow festival. December's snowfall there was the lowest since the Meteorological Agency began keeping records in 1961. At resorts farther south, conditions are worse. In Nagano, which hosted the 1998 Winter Olympics, skiers dodge wide patches of grass on the slopes. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. Douglas Perry reports in the Oregonian, "Bigfoot spotted on Washington State's Sherman Pass webcam, sparking new frenzy over fabled beast." Washington State's Department of Transportation tweeted webcam images of a large figure trudging through the snow. The accompanying message has all the signs of the quintessential 21st century Bigfoot fan. Excitement coupled with forced, "we're just having a laugh" jollity. WS Dot, whose Twitter account is known for irreverence, isn't the only government entity tracking fabled beasts these days. Last April, the Indian Army tweeted evidence of Bigfoot's cousin, Yeti. Michelle Baruchman and Christine Claridge report in the Seattle Times, "Seattle commuters fuming over cost of getting an Uber or Lyft after mass shooting downtown." The shooting, which killed one person and wounded seven others, drew a heavy response from police, fire, and medics. People trying to get out of downtown Seattle after the mass shooting Wednesday evening at 3rd Avenue and Pine Street were livid to see the price of hailing a ride from Lyft or Uber. At 6 p.m., rides to various parts of the Seattle area were costing $24 to $37, but some customers on social media, like Twitter user Nan, reported being quoted prices north of $100. Uber capped surging pricing within a mile of the shooting and is refunding unintended charges. On Czech News, Island Bakery will be turning off their ovens at the end of the month. With heavy hearts, the family-owned and operated bakers say the last day to buy fresh loaves will be January 31st. The shop, however, will remain open until February 10th to sell their day-old bread. The store opened way back in 1982 by Larry and Audrey Roscoe with a dream to provide fresh bread at a competitive price. Island Bakery left with no choice but to close their doors. "We work on a volume-based business model, and over the years we've seen a drastic decline in volume because of market trends, large national brands trying to give kickbacks and rebates to be exclusive. Our little bakery has no choice but to close its doors," said the Roscoe family on a statement in the company's Facebook. And only in the Breaker.News can you find features like this. Politicians said the darndest things at the Aberdeen Center Lunar New Year celebration, both on and off stage. See Ina Mitchell's video recap. And participants in the Cullen Commission inquiry into money laundering in British Columbia have lawyered up. More than two dozen lawyers are involved, in fact. The Breaker.News tells you who they are and who will be at Lawyerpalooza. Read the Breaker.News for these and more. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for the big deal feature. This week, Huawei Chief Financial Officer Meng Wanzhou returned to British Columbia Supreme Court on January 20th as her lawyers opposed the United States' application to extradite her to New York. She is wanted there to face charges of fraud for lying to HSBC in 2013 in order to get loans in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Meng allegedly lied about a Huawei subsidiary called Skycom in order to circumvent sanctions against Iran. While her lawyers say her case is all about those sanctions, Canada's Justice Department told the court that it is a simple case of fraud that satisfies the double criminality test. Associate Chief Justice Heather Holmes reserved judgment on January 24th. Holmes denied a media application to broadcast or webcast the proceedings, so we can't let you hear the sounds inside Courtroom 20 at the law courts. But there is also a high-stakes battle in the court of public opinion. Huawei wants to build Canada's 5G network, which could be worth billions of dollars for China. The independence of Canada's justice system is under scrutiny at a time when Liberal Party politicians, past and present, have suggested that Meng be freed in exchange for Canadian hostages Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor. On January 20th, I discovered a bizarre protest outside the law courts before Meng was escorted from her Shaughnessy mansion, where she lives on bail conditions. A couple dozen people, apparently in their late teens or early 20s, were holding signs that read, "Free Ms. Meng, bring Michael home, Trump stop bullying us, equal justice." But none of the protesters I talked to really had any knowledge or passion for the cause.
What group are you with, and why do you want Ms. Meng freed?
We just want equal justice.
Equal justice? How's equal justice? Are you aware of the extradition treaty?
I'm not aware.
You're not aware of the extradition treaty or the facts of the case?
No, I'm not.
You're not, but...
protesting equal rights for my man, Ms. Meng.
So, what group are you with?
Pardon?
What's the name of your group?
This is my group, of course.
Yeah, you don't have to answer anything.
You don't answer any questions? Who sent you here?
Here.
Well, what school do you go to?
Pardon?
What school do you go to?
I don't think you're allowed to ask us personal questions like that.
I'm a reporter. I ask personal questions.
We're not liable to answer if we don't want to.
Okay, so...
We're not yet.
Are you with a political party? Social organization? Civil society organization? But you don't want to answer questions about your cause? Or tell me your names?
No.
No? Are you paid to be here?
I'm not answering any more questions. Please stop asking.
So, you won't answer if you're paid or not to be here? That's an easy yes or no question.
I'm not paid.
But what about you?
As it turned out, they had been offered $100 or more for a couple hours' work each. One man, who did not give his name, spoke with documentary filmmaker Ina Mitchell.
Basically, I was told I was going to be in a music video.
In a music video?
Yeah.
And you're here, you got paid already?
No.
But you're going to be paid?
That was the promise, and then when it was like... When there was all these cameras and stuff, for a long time, I believed it was actually that it was filming a scene where someone was coming out of a car, and so I was genuinely like, okay, like, fine to do this. And then the reporters start showing up, and I was like, I don't really feel great about this anymore. And it's like, but, like, you know, I haven't done anything wrong. And it's like,
Well, why would you stay here then?
Because it's $100 for.
How much? They pay you?
It's $100 to be in a music video. That's what I was told.
Wow. So
I had a court appointment. I couldn't take the hun.
But don't get me in trouble with all the other people.
But how do you know, like, who's paying?
Yeah, that's the thing. So I start asking questions, and then there's a merry-go-round of non-answers. And it's like, okay, but I've already wasted my morning doing this. So do I stick around and get the $100?
Another protester was local actress Julia Hackstaff. She also didn't get paid because she realized it wasn't what she thought she had been hired to do.
So then this reporter, I think she was from CBC, I'm not sure, she started asking us questions, and I don't know, I really don't know how much time it was. It felt like forever, but at the same time, it was probably just 20 or 30 seconds. I realized, no, this is a real reporter. Like, there's no acting here. I even had the thought that maybe they were trying to get extra material from the background performers to just have random material, but it just made no sense because we were never given any information on anything. And normally, even if you're an extra background performer, there's always someone telling you where to go or what to do or what you're supposed to say. So yeah, it was just about a few seconds after this woman was asking us questions that I realized, no, I think this is not what they told us it was. And so then I kind of blew her off a bit. I wasn't rude or anything, but I told her, like, please stop asking us questions, and if there's other people, please ask them. And I turned to my friend when she left and told her, should we leave? Let's leave. Like, this feels off. awful. Like, I don't even know what's happening, but it doesn't feel right. So she said, yeah, let's leave. And I think that's when another person approached me. I'm not sure, maybe, I don't know who it was, but approached me like, why are you here? Why are you protesting? And I just, that's the footage that's been going around that I was just like, no, I'm leaving. I don't know what's, I didn't say I don't know what's happening, but I just said I'm leaving, right? So I would have known it was something paid to protest in a real scenario about something that I don't even know about. No, I would have never appeared. I would have never done that.
For Huawei's part, it denied any involvement in the phony protest. Huawei's public relations company, Hill & Knowlton, did not reply for comment. Neither the Chinese consulate. Zhang Shen, the Canadian reporter for China Central TV, denied any involvement, and he called it all a farce. Meanwhile, the Breaker.News, in conjunction with CTV News Vancouver's David Malko and documentary filmmaker Ina Mitchell, revealed that the private security company appointed by the court to watch over Meng counts the local Chinese consulate as a client. Lionsgate Risk Management Group's top two executives, Scott Feiler and Doug Maynard, would not deny that they have a contract to secure the consulate. Meng Wanzhou's main bodyguard wore a Lionsgate uniform on several occasions outside the consulate in September and October of last year. This has caused concern among pro-human rights groups that have protested outside the consulate. This is what Ivy Lee, a core member of Canadian Friends of Hong Kong, had to say.
So they were guarding the driveway and the gate, but also keeping a close eye on the protesters, on anyone out there on the sidewalk. And they had uniforms on, too.
Wow, that's very interesting,
mm-hmm.
because they have several duties that it means, right? One is they're guarding the consulate, so they're working for the consulate. And then they were also supposed to watch over Meng Wanzhou on behalf of the court. I mean, it's a bail condition. So mm-hmm. their duty is to make sure that she's not going to flee. So in a way, she's not working for her. I mean, they are not supposed to be working for her, but working for the law,
mm-hmm.
our law. And then also, why they are there, who hired them there to observe the protesters? What were they observing the protesters for? Observing if the protesters are going to jeopardize the consulate, or the protesters, they themselves were being harassed or jeopardized? I mean, so you are talking about at least three different roles there that are potentially conflicting.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is, this Lionsgate security company is recommended, it was recommended by Meng Wanzhou's lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that they have vetted their company. They consider definitely the company would be acceptable. And then the subsequent situation that you just described means that there's a very good reason that why they want this company to work for the bail conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Because it means that this company, at the end, is actually working also for the consulate.
That was Ivy Lee, a core member of Canadian Friends of Hong Kong, speaking with me on the Breaker.News podcast. Keep coming back to the Breaker.News and the Breaker.News podcast for more developments in the case of Meng Wanzhou. The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week, too. The Passenger Transportation Board of the BC government for finally giving Uber and Lyft the go-ahead to offer service in Metro Vancouver. It means another way to get around the region, although neither ride-hailing company is able to offer full service yet. And this week, an honorable mention to investigative reporter John Daly, who turns 70 years young. Happy birthday! You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob at thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting. Custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 26th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on January 26th in 1700, the Cascadia Megathrust earthquake, it rocked Vancouver Island to Northern California, and it caused a tsunami that was felt in Japan? Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.